Oh, yes, studious. I'm only picking up the general thing. Some of that looks kind of intense.
Start with the pens. This is last. Like this.
Okay, sit down. We're going to do our raffle now. Must be a present to win. We have four Microsoft pens. That will be the first four winning. Right?
Greg.
Also known as the cookie lady. Greg is responsible for your treats.
Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Greg. Bean forming pen. Greg Chin. Next, we have a copy of Windows 7 Home Edition. Ken Cowan. Did I spell it? Sorry for all the names I'm butchering, by the way. Windows 7 Ultimate. Gary Deavy. And the grand prize is a copy of Ivan Pasha's Sound Capture and Processing book. And if you're nice to him, he might even sign it for you. Steve Wilkins.
Yay! If I had a pen, I'd have you sign
it. After the.
All right.
Okay, we'll start to move quickly. So far we're dealing with the sounds we don't know about. Those are the noises. We don't have to do with them anything. They are just outside of our sound capturing. There are also a group of sounds which we know. This is what we send to the loudspeakers. Because when you watch a movie, there is a quite loud sound coming from the loudspeakers. When you talk with somebody, the other voice from the other side comes from the loudspeakers. It will be nice to be able to remove those sounds because we want to capture only the local sound. And this process is called acoustic echo cancellation. This is one of the first, the most frequently used, one of the earliest signal processing algorithms. What happens is that this is part of every single speakerphone and every single mobile phone. The scenario is very simple. We have two rooms. Microphone, loudspeaker, this is called near end room, our room. The other is called far end room. If you do like this, what is going to happen is this guy speaks, it is captured, transferred, it is transmitted by this loudspeaker, captured by this microphone, played back in the near end room, captured by this microphone, and what happens is every word ends up with kind of echoes. In the worst case, we can even have a feedback, which frequently happens with when you place a microphone close to the speakers. So if you can somehow remove from here the sound we sent to the loudspeaker, then that will be nice because on the output of this acoustic echo cancellation, you will have just the local sound, the near end sound. And this is pretty much usually in most of the systems happens in two stages. The first is known as acoustic echo canceller. That's the first application of the so-called adaptive filters. So roughly what happens is that we send this signal to the loudspeaker and it goes and is captured by the microphone, convolved with a function called room impulse response. Not for the same for all frequencies, and for some frequencies not at all, but in general, after filtering, this signal ends here. And of course, there is a local speech and the local noise. If we can somehow estimate this filter, then we can go and filter the signal we send to the loudspeakers and simply subtract it. Theoretically, we will end up with just the local speech and the noise, because if our estimation here is correct, we will be able to subtract the entire portion of the loudspeaker signal. This does not happen usually, regardless of the fact that, as you can see, this filter is adaptive. We carefully watch the output and try to tweak the coefficients of the filter on the fly so we can minimize the output here. And what is left here is so-called, from the loudspeaker signal, is so-called residual. And usually, a typical well-designed acoustic echo canceller removes 15 to 20 dB of the loudspeaker signal. So it's a 20 dB down, still audible. What we can do more? Then the next reasonable step, if you guys remember, we had a linear beamformer, and then it was that suppressor thing which we applied gains between 0 and 1. Same thing follows. We already did what we could dealing with the signal in as a complex number with phases and magnitudes. What's left is we can do some estimation of the energy and directly suppress it. Estimate a gain between 0 and 1 for each frequency bin and try to suppress what's left from this energy in the same way as the noise suppressor does. Except that instead of having a constant noise model here, we do on the fly estimation how much of this energy is still left here. And this is called acoustic echo suppressor. So the combination between acoustic echo canceller and acoustic echo suppressor usually is named as acoustic echo reduction system. So far, we had one loudspeaker and one microphone. That's a perfect speakerphone, and this is pretty much what happens in every single speakerphone. In addition, what we can do is here to have one more block, which is the stationary noise suppressor, the first signal processing algorithm we discussed it, and voila, you have a pretty nice and decent speakerphone. Okay, that's good. So now we can do speakerphones. And the question is, can we do stereo? The first idea that came up is, okay, we'll chain two acoustic echo cancellers. One of them will get the left channel, the other will get the right channel. We'll subtract whatever they capture, and we'll have our echo suppressed. This does not work. And the reason for this is that those two signals are highly correlated. Pretty much on the two left and right loudspeakers, if I want to play a sound source right in the middle, I'll have them the same. But if the sound source is more on the left, we'll have it more on the left loudspeaker channel, but pretty much attenuated and delayed signal will emit from the right channel. And this means that the acoustic echo canceller, if you do it in this way, will be chasing those phantom sound sources, not the actual signals from the speakers. Because of this correlation, let me put it in this way. Those adaptive filters try to find a solution of a mathematical problem. We have two filters to estimate and just one equation. So pretty much this means that we have infinite number of solutions. And the chances are two adaptive filters to converge to the right solution. So if the proportion between left and right channel changes and they to stay converged is very minimal. What happens in reality is that those adaptive filters try to chase those phantom sound sources. They constantly try to find a better solution, and as a result, we have a very bad echo suppression. It goes down 3, 4, 5 dB, somewhere there. So potential approaches, and they're basically written all over specialized papers, is what we can do. Can we decorrelate the two loudspeaker channels? One of the guys actually suggested in a scientific paper, what if we introduce 10% nonlinear distortions on the left channel? This is sufficient to decorrelate the channels, and voila, we have those two adaptive filters converging properly. 10% TEG is painful to listen, actually. So, in this particular direction, people continue to see, okay, what if we use the psychoacoustics and start to introduce inaudible distortions which humans cannot hear, and still to keep those two channels decorrelated in a way sufficient for those two filters to deconverge, and there are potential solutions in that area. There are other papers which say, okay, those guys, they cannot converge, let's do just acoustic echo suppression. That's costly because it introduces nonlinear distortions. What we do in devices such as Kinect is try to live with the realities. We have one microphone, we have one adaptive filter. That's it. We cannot have more than one. Then the question is, can we somehow learn the way signals are mixed in the microphone? And then to mix the signals from which we send to the speakers and to use just a single adaptive filter to compensate for people moving around and changing, because my loudspeakers are there. The microphone is here, but when I move, this pretty much sound reflects, bounces from me, and this slightly changes the filters which I have to use, and hopefully this guy can compensate for this. Initially, what we do is sending a chirp signal. This is pretty much a linear frequency increase from 200 to 7,200 hertz, and just estimate those filters during the first calibration phase. That was working perfectly to the moment my colleagues in Xbox team said, this sounds ugly. This is not for a consumer product. So this is why today when you go to Xbox and listen, you'll hear this sound twice. So this music is carefully selected to have every single frequency between 200 and 7,200 hertz presented. It sounds way better than the ugly linear chirp, and this happens during the installation of your Xbox device, Kinect device, and then we learn and store this mixing matrix and use one single adaptive filter in real time when you watch the movie, and there is a sound and shooting, and you want to say Xbox pause. This is what happens, that on each of the four microphones, we get rid of most of the echo here. So this is one of the things which is brand new. I want to underline how I'm proud of this algorithm. The inventor of the acoustic echo cancellation himself from Bell Labs in 1991 wrote a paper stating stereo acoustic echo cancellation is not possible. And in 2007, we demonstrated a working solution during our Microsoft Research Tech Fest, and in 2010, it's a part of industrial product. So, it's a little bit more complex than it looks on those simple diagrams, but I will use this just to make a simple demo here. So this is what one of the microphones capture. And this is what we have on the output.
He could not remember his name. I never can leave you two alone.
The shelves were bare of both jam or crackers. A joy to every child is the swan boat.
So as you can see, we can get rid of most of the sound from the loudspeakers. I want to underline again how challenging is this. When you stay and use this algorithm in your conference room, usually you set up the level of the loudspeakers to level which is human voice. We speak between around 60 dB SPL. This is how much you will set the loudspeaker level. When you sit in your gaming room and start to play a game or to listen to a movie, usually the sound level is around 75, 80, 85. During our user studies, we measured crazy people which listen at 90 dB SPL. 90 dB SPL is 30 dB above your voice. This is 30 times more energy came to the speakers than from your voice. And you have to get rid of those and to have your voice at least 20-25 dB above the noise floor what's left so you can get decent communication and speech recognition. Okay, what you can do next? So again, this talk is not just Kinect. We're talking a lot of algorithms which are sound capturing related. One of the classic algorithms which is floating around is so-called sound source separation. So we have an audio channel with two voices, mix it. Can we separate them? Yes, we can do this even with a single channel. A microphone array with more than one channel gives us additional cues because at least those two voices are in different directions. And we have pretty much two separate group of algorithms. One of them is so-called blind source separation. And mathematically speaking, the question is, we have this signal, can we split it on two in a way those results will be maximally statistically independent? Presumably, voice one, voice two. This is just uses the fact that the two voices are statistically not correlated. The second is that usually those two people are in two different directions. So can you use the microphone array to say, by the way, one of them is here and one of them is there. So to enforce, because we use different properties. Presumably, this happens in very rare cases in signal processing, but those two orthogonal things, eventually the effects of them can sum. Usually you have one algorithm which does separation 10 dB and the other does 10 dB and you chain them and instead of 20 you get 12. So the good thing is not always some, but in this particular case, because we do combination of orthogonal features, we can expect that this is going to happen. And actually, it happens. We combine those two algorithms. Here is just to see how much we can separate them. This is distance in meters. And this is the angle between the sound sources. Roughly, think about this is a four-seat coach. 1.5 meters, this is person one, two persons in between, this is the most left and the most right person. You move it further, the distance between them is the same, but because it goes further, the angle shrinks. So the same coach at 4 meters, we have just 25, 26 degrees between those four, the two outer persons outside, or outer persons on the coach. And pretty much this is how many dB you can separate those two sound sources. If you can separate the other guy 20 dB, this is already quite good. And then this happens up to 2.5, 2.7 meters.
Could you define SIR and PESQ?
SIR is signal to interference ratio. If they are the same equal loudness, how much you will suppress one of them. PSQ is something which most of the audio people are not familiar with, and it stands for Perceptual Evaluation of Sound Quality. So this is a standard which came from telecommunications. There is ITUT, International Telecommunication Union, recommendation P800, which is called MOS testing. How we can evaluate how good is the sound quality, how humans perceive it. And it says simply this. You get 100 people, ask them to listen to a set of recordings and to evaluate them from 1 to 5. Then you average And this is the mean opinion score. It's a number between 1 and 5, where 1 is very bad quality, I cannot understand, and 5 is crystal clear quality. This is time consuming. This is something which you're not willing to do quite constantly. PSQ is a signal processing algorithm which is proxy of this type of measurement. So you have the clean speech signal, you have the contaminated signal, run it through this signal processing algorithm, which is a standard in IT-UT, and you get a number from 1 to 5, which is very highly correlated to what you can do with real people. But happens in 1/10 of the time of the duration of your recording. So pretty much increasing the PSQ means you get a better perceptual quality. 0.1 point is audible if you are in the business. Not expert on audio, but can listen well. 0.2 improvement in PESC, my grandmother should be able to tell the difference. And here we talk about 0.5, 0.4. So apparently the perceptual quality improvement is well audible. Again, you do heavy processing, you improve the quality of the signal you want. The heavy processing introduces distortions which reduce the quality. It's always a question of balance. And this is why we carefully, when we do signal processing algorithms, especially for industrial devices, we carefully watch this coefficient. Because for us, this is the feedback. How did we overdo it? If you overdo it, yes, the nasty signal you want to suppress is gone, but the one you want to stay already sounds very bad. So PESC is actually one of the measures how well we do. Usually, at some point, you tighten the bolts of the algorithm, it goes up, 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 and at some point you overdo it, PESC start to go down, this is the moment you have to stop and return a little bit.
So is there any intelligibility measures in the standard?
There are intelligibility measurements, they are mostly only with humans and pretty much, as far as the intelligibility is concerned, the only thing we can do is to decrease it. Pretty much you cannot beat the human brain. Automated? Nope. So we'll skip this and listening demo. We have two persons shoulder by shoulder, 2.4 meters away, speaking. One of them in Chinese, the other in Korean. My two interns.
跟,
and then we do our magic using the power of the microphone array and the independent component analysis. So this is not selecting one voice from 500, but still at 2.4 meters with all the reverberation and noises in that room, to be able to say, so the quality is maybe not great, but sufficient for speech recognition, sufficient for telecommunication. Technically, this means that I can sit on the couch with my wife and we can watch the two channels simultaneously. Most probably she is on the large screen watching the soaps and I'm on the small screen the latest football game. And you can speak and send voice commands and for each one of the screens, they'll be executed separately. So pretty much this is one of the potential application of this algorithm.
Ivan, how much dB differentiation
is
that?
So what we just listened to was around 21, 22 dB. If we return back to the chart, we're talking 2.4 meters, 26 degrees, yes, around 21, 22 dB. Pretty much if you go closer here, you are 28. This is another interesting thing. If I return here, the blue is what we already had published in this area, and people were claiming, wow, we did 12 dB. First time we tried to publish that, we achieved in the same conditions 28 dB, our paper was rejected. This was not possible. So, again, we do a lot of complicated signal processing. Why? Why? What you should do? What are the applications? And here is a typical application for cars. You guys have heard about Ford Sync, Kia Uvo, Nissan Leaf. All of those three cars share the same property. They are in-car infotainment system, runs on Microsoft Auto platform, which on top of everything contains audio stack for telecommunication, and they do speech recognition. Telecommunication, okay. This converts the car audio system into a gigantic Bluetooth headset. For the driver who listens to the nice and cool audio system and the good speakers, that's a pleasure. Unfortunately, the noise in the car is enough loud that when you do acoustic echo cancellation and our noise suppression and then do encoding and decoding to get it through the GSM or CDMA telephone line, on the other hand, people are not happy and I can't pay you what they hear. So this is what we have in the car. And on the other end, what we have is so I selected a segment when the noise kind of slowly increases. This is the car accelerating on a highway. So you notice that those brakes, this is not frame drops during the transfer of the audio. This is just the encoders refuses to work already in so bad signal-to-noise ratio. The standard GSM encoder is not adapted to and designed to work in so high, so low signal-to-noise ratio. Second thing we notice it is that those all processing blocks are optimal in a different way. Some of them are minimum mean square error, log minimum mean square error, PESC is for codecs. And then the idea is, okay, what if we go and optimize end-to-end? So we have a substantial amount of recordings we do and process them through all of those blocks, including encoder and decoder, simulating the entire telephone line. And here we measure PESC. And then the question is, can we go and start to tweak the nuts and the bolts and the algorithm to tune it in a way to maximize PESC out the other end of the telephone line, to maximize the user experience end to end? And of course, because the noise is too high, what we're going to do is to add one microphone array, two, maybe four elements, to do the acoustic echo cancellation first on each of the channels, to do our beamformer and the noise suppressor, and then this line entirely optimize it, brings us something like this. If I can find my cursor. Okay. So first thing you notice it, we can hear the sound in the car. And it's completely fine. As far as the voice of the speaker has maximum perceived quality.
But that kind of noise should be easy to suppress, right? Because this is fairly stationary, just like in your earlier case, two speakers.
Every suppression has a price. Yeah. You squeeze 14 dB noise suppression, that's already on the border. You go 20 and you start to hurt badly the... This is the same audio signal. Just those 6, 7, 8, 12 dB we get from here actually were enough helpful to get the encoder to work properly. And pretty much the optimization process stopped it from the moment the encoder started to work properly without overdoing it. This is the key idea here, that you do optimization end-to-end and get the maximum of in terms of perceived sound quality. So, what we can do and why we have to do this in the car? Because when you drive, Your hands are busy, your eyes are busy. What's left is ears and mouth. So speech is kind of a good media to communicate with the computer system of the car. And you are not talking about the computer who does the ignition or controls the gearbox. We're talking about the computer which handles your music, your telephone, stuff which is related to the information and entertainment of the user. So speech is a good modality and good component of the multimodal human-computer interface. It contains buttons, it contains graphic screen, still it's kind of okay to look at. In general, when you design such systems, the question you have to answer is, do I want drivers which I share the road with to do this in their cars? So without going very further, I'll show you a short movie segment of what we have designed here in MSR.
Listening to some music. Play track live for the party. So this was the classic way to listen to set the speech query, but we don't have to specify track or album or artist. Play Paul Simon. So as you can see, the system didn't need the clarification about the artist. Play the Submarine by the Beatles. And it can even understand not correctly specified names. Let's make some phone calls. My Bluetooth telephone is paired with the system and the computer knows my address book, so I can ask directly by name. Call Jason Whitehorn.
Calling Jason Whitehorn, say yes or no?
Yes. Cell.
Calling Jason A. Whitehorn, cell.
So this was a classic and slightly painful way to interact with the Bluetooth phone, but our system can understand and doesn't need this ambiguation if the name is unique. For example, call Constantine at home.
Calling Constantine Evangelos Lignos at home.
But there is even more. Frequently, the driver needs to respond to some urgent text messages, and it's definitely not safe while you're driving. So we can use our speech input to do the same.
Message from mom, ETA, say reply, delete, call back, or see it.
Reply. In 10 minutes.
Am I right that you want me 10 minutes? Or a number from the list?
Yes.
Message sent.
Maybe you notice it, but there is some irregularity in movement of our car, and I'm afraid that we have a flat tire. And because this is a rented car, I even don't know how to open the trunk. So now is the time to open the antique car owner's manual and to try to figure this out. But instead of this, our computer already did this for us, so we can just ask. How to open the trunk. And we see the proper page here. But then we need to replace the flat tire. How to replace a flat tire. And we go directly to the page of the owner's manual, which describes how to replace the flat tire. Once we have our flat tire fixed, we can continue our trip. And listen to some music. Play Nora Jones.
So, two things here. On film, in a movie, you can do everything. This was done on the fly pretty much with one shot. And we didn't have much training to do this. I had two or three persons in the driving simulator with projectors and microphones behind me, and I made a mistake only once when I almost crashed the car. But otherwise, this is kind of a proof that you can drive and operate the system with less distraction than usual. In all cases, responding to text messages in this way is way safer than trying to punch the keys. Yes, it's forbidden in most of the states, and still most of the teenagers do it. And the reason here is, the question is not do we want the drivers, which should we share the road with, to do the same, to do this. It's more, do we want them to type, or they to respond with voice, at least on most urgent messages. Anyway, this is a kind of demonstration of one of the application of capturing sounds, not only for telecommunication, but for one of the modalities to operate with the computer. And of course, one of the next thing is we sit in our media room and try to find the remote control, or argue for the remote control, and the question is, can we use our voice for this? One of my favorite ads is when basically the man is laying on the sofa and the remote control is on the other end of the coffee table, and the guy basically leaves the coffee table so it can slide in his hand instead of to stand. So now with devices like Kinect, you don't have to do even this. So what we have in Kinect? So we have that multi-channel acoustic echo cancellation, something which no other company has as IP and as algorithm so far. We have a pretty decent beamforming and spatial filtering. And we have, eventually, in some cases, the sound source separation algorithm. What Kinect has in addition to this, there is a 3D video camera. Okay, there are two cameras. One of them is invisible light. The other is infrared depth camera. And this four-element microphone array. The depth camera is another new, pretty much revolutionary thing in the area of human-computer interaction. It works in complete darkness and allows us to do allows us to do gesture recognition. What happens is that once you stand in front of the camera, after some processing, your body is disassembled and you have XYZ of each of the major joints. Initially, there was just the head and the two hands, but later you can do the knees, the ankles. Even if there is a woman which wears a long skirt, we are able to find the knees and the ankles so we can track the body. Then, gestures like this is, if the Z of this joint is bigger than the Z of this joint, boom, you have a hand rise. Gesture like this, if the Euclidean distance between this joint and this joint are closer than given distance, we have a clap, etc., etc. Most of the gestures we operate are quite simple to program after above this sophisticated skeleton tracking layer, which is part of the new XDK platform. And this allows game developers actually to create a very fancy and interesting games. We'll see some of them in the demo, but before we to go there, a couple of minutes of illustration of what we can do. In combination. No? Okay, let me find this. So, in short, having the depth camera combined with the microphone array opens a new ways to communicate with the computers. I will demonstrate quickly the gesture recognition in the Kinect dashboard so you can see how we can go select, start a game, etc., and create a pretty much sophisticated and easy and intuitive ways to humans to communicate with the computers. Yes, we can create a very funny games. I'm not going to dance. I'm not going to play Kinect Adventures tonight, But mostly, I think the value of this combination between sounds and sound and gesture and speech recognition comes that we can communicate and talk with and interact with the computers in a way more natural way than we can do it keyboard and mouse as we are used to. So the last thing, if you guys haven't see, this is the book which I published last year. If you want to go a little bit deeper and to play a little bit with those algorithms we discussed, there are some MATLAB scripts there, so there are some WAV files, so you can go and do something by yourself if you are interested in this. Before to go to questions, I want to show you some things here. So you can see my image in the depth camera. Now I have gestures in control and can go. I think the game will start, but we will try to. Okay, one of the ways to interact is combining, basically using gestures. So the game is Dance Central, and technically it teaches you how to dance together with Lady Gaga and other. But the only thing I want to show here is the way we can select and to use the menus. Okay. I can see the menu items. Okay. And then can select who is playing. And for example, look, I have my left hand here for the left side of menus. I can have my right hand. No mouse, no controller, nothing. And this is where the dancing begins. So pretty much very natural, no controllers.
Hey, how you doing? It's block some moves.
Who's going to dance?
Pro, jump right in, or we can watch.
Come here.
Five, six.
Come here. Come in. Come here. It's easy. Trust me. Come on. Okay. Watch wave your hand. Like this. Okay. Yes. Who is one of us is in control? Nope. Okay. That's.
Don't even do that. Don't go there.
So try like this. Resume. Up. Just repeat it. If you see red, okay, you're not doing it.
Try to nail it. Get it going clean three times. Five, six, seven, eight.
Very nice.
Five, six, seven, eight. make it happen. 5, 6, 7, 8. You gotta do this move 3 times. 5, 6, 7, 8.
Nice. Which one?
No, the virtual mix. You'll have a virtual mixer, so you can mix,
It's
more track
mixer. It's possible. And just one more quick demo. For this, I'll need to mute the microphones. Okay. So you see, I am almost ready. Xbox, Kinect. I don't have to touch the controller. I don't have to make gestures.
Turn on the microphone.
This microphone is off, hopefully. What we use is Xbox microphones there. So pretty much you have to say anything. Just preceded the command by the keyword Xbox. This is another thing which was a difficult research problem 18 months ago. Open microphone and no push to talk button. You guys remember it in the car. I push the button, say what I want to say means I have to tell the computer I'm talking to you. Now the microphones listen to my voice. There is no reaction, but when I can say Xbox, Kinect ID. Is the microphone active? Xbox, Kinect ID. So pretty much everything I see on the screen in black and white is a command I can say. Etc., etc. It will start the identification software, which I can go. This is a different way to select. You pause and hold. And I want this different profile. And then go and sign for this guy. And this is just a quick demonstration. I know many people like this to see how you move and you control the avatar. And that's the last thing I'm going to show you tonight. Then so, as you can see, oh, you want me here. Okay. Okay, this ends the whole story. So that was it. Demonstration of strange and still not quite known way to communicate with the computer. I'm open for your questions. I promise you to stay, let's say, 20, 30 minutes after the talk so to start some of the games. You guys can play Kinect Adventures, Jump, etc., etc. For me, as a pretty much not into the gaming, this device breaks two barriers. The first is the gender barrier. The image of the gamer holding the controller, sitting, usually male, early teenager, early 20s, and shooting the enemies is gone. Dancing is going to open the gaming for the second gender. And the second is that, for God's sake, at some point, we have to stand from the couch, stand in front of the device, and start to move. And this is for every single person, regardless of the age, so it breaks the age barrier as well. That was it. Thank you. You were a very, very, very good audience. Questions, please. Here?
So what are other voice capability besides command and control? Are there anything?
So there are games. So think about Kinect. And in general, Xbox is a kind of operating system. It exposes certain interfaces. Whatever the game companies decide to put, they have access to the speech interfaces, they have access to the skeleton tracking, and then this is their fantasy. It's tricky. Speech is not on the level in speech recognition, which is the graphics and the controller handling. So from the games we have today available for Kinect, only two use voice and speech. One of them is Kinectimals, when you can name your animal and send some commands and the animal listens to you. The other is actually the biggest surprise on the market, an extremely good speech recognizer, very rich grammar and very good communication with the computer. How they did this, we don't know, because it's not a Microsoft game. But that's pretty much, we are going to improve the underlying technologies, but what and how the game companies which create the games we're going to do with the speech gestures, etc., etc., it's up to them. Go ahead.
Was a customer able to upgrade their firmware when new versions come out?
Yes.
Connect itself?
Yes. The firmware is pretty much the device has only booter. From the moment you connect it to your Xbox, it downloads the latest, greatest from internet and pushes to the device. The gesture can do this. We do not have a technology part of the SDK which allows you to guess the head orientation. I'm not saying it is not doable. I'm not saying that we don't have the technology. It's not available in the existing.
With the microphones, though.
With the microphones, what they can do is to estimate the direction, means this angle in this plane. So it can tell you where you are, but it cannot tell you what is the orientation of your head. And partially you can do this with the depth camera, but that's something which it's not part of the interfaces and the technologies SDK exposes. The game companies, can they do this? Yes, they have access to the raw data. That actually gives them advantage because they have something which the others don't. It's doable. It's not in the existing SDK. So this is Kinect identification. What the program was doing was trying to estimate my biometrics, the size of my bones, and this allows this program later when I just stand in front of the device to say, this is Ivan. This is not as difficult as it sounds because in your family you have 3, 4, 5 people, so usually different size. So you can relatively reliably do a person identification based on biometrics. It is not a serious problem. It is not in the existing SDK, but recognizing by voice is another signal audio processing algorithm which we can use. And by the way, the combination of biometrics plus voice, which are orthogonal again, can give you, in combination, a very reliable identification, pretty much beyond of the need of what the casual atmosphere, you play a game. It's a trivia game. You just say the answer and the scores goes to your account. Yes, you need maybe 97-98% recognition, and you can do this by voice without biometrics or with biometrics without voice. So it's kind of reliable. But eventually, at some point, we may have them both.
Okay. But in the earlier example, when you were driving in the car and telling the thing to play a song, what if you said, we're talking, having a conversation, and you said, I'm going to the play tonight? Would it immediately grab on that word play and play a song tonight?
So to a certain degree, yes. This is why I said this is a natural language input. So what happens is that we go one degree beyond just recognizing the words. We try to understand the meaning. Even a perfect speech recognizer, even today's speech recognizers are better than the humans. The major source of irregular queries, ambiguous queries is the human. So we try and give certain freedom. It's not as good as just you having a conversation, but in general, we tell our users, you have to say first the command, what you want, play, and then what you want to be played. Even we tell them play, and then you have to say artist, album, track, but usually they are mistaken. We hear commands like play track Beatles or something like this. On the backside, we ask the users to stick with this structure, but on the backside, actually, we can handle stuff like play me, what was that song about submarines? And usually this will get you to the yellow submarine. But we don't advertise this because this is our basically backup, our increased robustness to handle human errors. So technically, in most of the cases, it will handle it properly. How good will be to insert the entire conversation and just try to extract some words? Maybe not. Yes, it happens once, just to initiate the conversation. So presumably I'm talking with the passenger, want to talk to the system, push to talk the button, then the conversation with the computer starts. Presumably we can exchange a couple of phrases, the computer can ask for disambiguation, etc., but that's the conversation, the opening and closing a task. The task can be call somebody, can be play that song, etc., etc. During this, you don't have to push the button again. But at least once you have to signal, I want to talk with you. This is not the case with the Kinect. This is another brand new thing, unknown to so far, very difficult to achieve in the research environment, and it's now a commercial product.
In the car, once the computer has completed your request, does it continue to listen to you if you want to make another request, or do you have to?
You have to push the button. It's on task level. You have a certain task, you signal the beginning, you talk, finish the conversation, enter the task, the computer sleeps.
Okay. Yvonne, does it learn when in the car, when you're making requests over time, does it learn your terminology like a smartphone does?
So it's a questionable how much your smartphone does. I think one of the next things we want to do in this Microsoft Auto platform is, and actually it's valid for Xbox as well, is more recognition who is talking and adaptation, the speech recognition model towards this particular person. Then once we have, let's say, I go to the car, either by opening, because the keys are different, they have unique code, or by some biometrics, by my voice, it recognizes me, loads my acoustical models which are adapted for my voice. And then next step will be, and by the way, these guys have a very funny way to express the tasks, but I can adapt. Based on the feedback, if he confirms frequently, I can put this and start to learn. But this is not, we're not there yet. And pretty much the first adaptation towards the person on an acoustical level is the first thing which we can and should do before to go to that level. Mm-hmm. Rick?
How much is the speech recognition affected by accent?
Okay, it works for my accent. In speech technology group here in Microsoft Research, we have from 11 people, how many? One or two native speakers?
Two
native speakers.
Three.
three. So the eight of us are born outside of the US, pretty much on every single continent. They work for us, so we train the speech recognizers.
How much of the process is all of your audio processing done in the box, or is some of that done in the Xbox? Same with the video positioning. Is that done in the box, or is that done in the
Xbox? Actually, in many cases, we have several instances of the audio pipeline running. When you do a game chat, means you're playing Halo, etc., etc., and do real-time communication with somebody playing this on Xbox Live, games, they don't want audio processing to steal any CPU cycles because they're busy rendering certain the complex graphics. Then we have a specialized audio CPU inside the device. It's not very powerful. It's a mobile phone style CPU 2005, ARM9 200 MHz. And it can handle the entire audio stack. For speech recognition, this happens on the console. We drag the four channels down because the audio stack for speech recognition is a little bit more sophisticated. We do more processing there, trying to clean up, because speech recognizer in general is more sensitive to the residuals of the echo and the noises. And when you do voice chat using Windows Live Messenger, and you can do this from your room, and I actually appreciate this very much because I sit in my media room and I talk with my parents across the ocean, then there is the same voice audio stack we run on the device, but it runs on the console because it's kind of pointless to send it to the device. So three variants of the same code are executed either on the console or on the CPU, on the device. The video up to the depth camera processing happens inside the device. There are three or four DSP processors which handle the video in the infrared, and what we drag down is black and white image. Every pixel is not brightness but distance. All the skeleton tracking happens on the console. This is very sophisticated, complicated algorithm. It cannot run on the device. It can, but it should be two times bigger and one more fan to get rid of the heat from inside. So this is pretty much where we are. Done.
What's the maximum distance that the device can be from the console?
It's a USB. You already can buy from Amazon a USB cable extender for Kinect. So 20 feet, I don't know, most probably. Maybe a little bit more.
50 feet?
I haven't tried.
Full speed? That would help.
It's a full speed USB.
12 megahertz? I get confused. 12 megahertz or the hundreds of megahertz?
Hundreds of megahertz. It's a USB 2.0. Full speed and everything that can run on that certain distance, USB 2.0 should be able to run Kinect. But I haven't tried. This is pretty much, it came with this cable, and this is what I use.
And all the power is supplied by the USB?
Nope.
Oh, okay. I don't see it. All I see is one.
So this is a non-standard USB. It carries all the standard USB signals, but instead of plus 5, we have 1 amp, we have a way more powerful power supply. It goes, and then the rest is connected to...
Oh, it breaks out of the console.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yes. You cannot feed three, four DSPs plus a separate CPU, plus the cameras, plus the infrared projector with 1 amp. Period. Microsoft is unlikely to release this. You can buy Kinect device. You can search internet. 7 days after we ship it, Kinect, you can download Hackett drivers already for Windows. So,
doesn't that sell devices? Don't you guys like that? I mean, people are going to buy it just for that.
This is cool and nice, and actually the margin is not bad for the device itself, but if you use it with Xbox, we get royalties from the games as well. Otherwise, it's completely okay you guys understand that Microsoft Research has a very good relationship with most of the professors in the academia. They are dying, most of them, to get hold on the device, to plug it into a Windows machine and to start to experiment with human-computer interaction interfaces. But from our business team point of view, okay, a bunch of researchers want to do this, and that's pretty much it. How many are they? How much will cost us to ship the drivers? Meh. So we may even, MSR may eventually release some drivers, not as a product, but as a free download relatively soon. There are plans and discussion for this, but no promises. We don't know what is going to happen here. It would be nice to go and to play on your Windows machine. And most of the algorithms actually are designed in Windows for both video and audio. We have this connected to our Windows machines, but this is not something we can share for now.
Eventually, probably.
Sooner or later.
I bet. Bet nickel.
I thought that the hackers will need at least 2-3 months before to release those drivers on the 7 day they are already available for after we shipped Kinect. Yes.
So you hired those guys.
Which guys?
I don't know, the guys that came up with the drivers in 7 days.
You're not Microsoft employees? More questions or it's playtime? Thank you very much. Thank you.